Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, September 22nd, 2012. This is episode 911. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a free 30-day trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. Find out what your gadget's worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest phone at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's Gadget Christmas on the Tech Guy Show. Let me tell you how you get a hold of us, how you participate, and then I'll talk a little bit about the iPhone 5. And as it happens, I also have the Kindle Fire HD. A bunch of others. It's Gadget Christmas, I'm telling you. If you want to call the show, we do. It's a call-in show, and I love taking your calls. It's really the backbone of the show. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. That's 8888-ASK-LEO or 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S., any one of our 180 stations nationwide. Or if you're outside, and I know we have a lot of internet listeners, so if you're outside the U.S., you can use that number with Skype Out or a similar VoIP client, and it won't cost you anything because it's a toll-free number. 8888-ASK-LEO. The website is techguylabs.com. We've got two people working on that site day in, day out. And I don't include myself. I got James DeRuvo, who takes the notes as I speak. He's writing now, scribble, scribble, scribble. And then after the fact, Josh Windisch, who's here in our Tech Guy Labs, he's got the lab coat, and he works on it, writes our tip of the week and things like that. But we got a good tip of the week based on last week's call on how to get the most out of Skype. Our tip of the week this week at techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And I do appreciate, each comment. Or each question has a comment space, each question and answer pair. So you can add your own thoughts as you're listening to the show. Let's see. Well, here it is. The iPhone 5, which I did not get for free. Apple seeds more and more people now. They've always given review units a week early. Units that you don't get to keep. When you get a review unit, you always have to send it back after a month or two. But the review units go out to the Wall Street Journal, Walt Mossberg, David Pogue at the New York Times, usually Ed Baig in USA Today, the gadget blogs, but more and more bloggers are getting them. In fact, even smaller bloggers are getting them. And there's some interesting gaps. The Verge, which is the number one gadget blog, did not get a review unit. Anand Tech, who's done some really good work on the hardware on this, did not. I did not. And I frankly don't take in general review units because then there's a couple of things. First of all, it feels like a deal with the devil. They're always calling you and saying, hey, where, well, you got that review unit. Where's your review? And then if it's a negative review, they go, well, how dare you? We let you use this phone ahead of time. And so I just buy them. And I ordered this. In fact, you had to order it almost immediately after they went on sale last week. To get it yesterday on Friday, the 21st. I'll give you the bottom line first, then we'll talk about the new iPhone 5. So there's two questions, in my mind, two top-level questions you need to ask. First of all, if you have an existing iPhone, should you upgrade? And a second, if you're choosing for the first time a smartphone, iPhone or Android phone? So the first question, should you upgrade? I think if you have a iPhone 4 or 4S, you don't need to upgrade. What's, the significant difference in this phone is it's pretty simple. It's got one, let me For the home audience, I'll show you. It's got one extra icon row, 176 pixels more, one icon row more. And if you're in an LTE area on AT&T or Verizon or, I guess, Sprint, then it might be worth it because this is the first LTE iPhone. That's a very fast data. We're in an LTE area for Verizon only, so I got a Verizon phone. And, it's pretty fast. I did just before the show because I wanted to wait until a lot of people had iPhone 5s. I did a speed test just before the show on the LTE. I was getting almost 20 megabits per second down and almost 15 megabits per second up. Now, it varies quite a bit, but it's very, very fast. That's actually faster than my home internet access by a lot. So it is really fast. Now, of course, you're going to pay for bandwidth, their bandwidth caps, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if you need high speed and most importantly, if you have LTE in your area, I think it's worth upgrading for the LTE or at least getting an LTE phone if high speed data is important to you. The extra icon row, it's not, you know, if it's a big screen you want, I think there are better choices than this. This isn't that big of a screen. It's just a little bit bigger. So if you have an iPhone 4 or an iPhone 4S and you don't need LTE, I'd say it's not worth the upgrade. Don't spend the money. If you have an iPhone, iPhone 3, iPhone 3G, 3GS, if you have a really old iPhone, absolutely this is worth upgrading. The Retina display is gorgeous. There are some internal differences you may notice. It is thinner. It's lighter. You know, I don't know how important that is, but for people who like design, it is certainly a beautiful design. I think this, even though it doesn't have a glass back and has a metal back, I think that's probably a good choice because it's a little more robust. It is a beautiful design. As always, Apple does a great job with design. The screen, according to specs anyway, is a better screen even than the iPhone 4S with a broader color palette. It is very beautiful, very bright. But I think the 4 and 4S were gorgeous too. I don't know if I would notice a difference if I hadn't been told. It's also, by a factor of two, the fastest iPhone. In fact, PC Magazine said it's the fastest smartphone out there. Now, I'll be honest, very few of the things you do on a smartphone need all that speed. So, in side-by-side, it's not going to be, you know, wow, oh my goodness, it's a speed demon. It's faster, but see, specs and benchmarks are one thing, but what your real-world experience is going to be is another. And, you know, after using it, admittedly, for just a day, and remember that prior to this, my phone was the Samsung Galaxy S3. I don't notice it being appreciably fast. And certainly I have an iPhone 4S and used it for a long time, for a year. And, it's faster. I know. It's twice as fast. I saw the benchmarks. I can't tell. So really, if you're thinking about upgrading from an iPhone 4, you know, you're going to get it for $200 because it's the two-year bump, that might be worth it. I would not pay the full price from a 4S unless you really want that LTE or you really want that extra icon row. Other than that, it's not so different. Now, there are many people who will buy it just because, you know, it's Apple, it's a work of art. In fact, it's already outsold the iPhone 4S. It's the fastest selling iPhone in history already. Now, the second question I mentioned is, well, if you're looking at Android versus iPhone, that's a little bit more difficult. That's a very personal decision. Now, I'm going to use this iPhone for a few weeks exclusively. I put the Samsung Galaxy S3 aside. But when you compare them side to side, there's no question the Samsung Galaxy S3 screen is so much bigger. Yes, it's slower, supposedly, but I can't tell the difference. And there are things on Android I'm really going to miss, like the widgets, some of the apps. The integration with Google is smoother and easier. So, you know, I will miss that. If you're choosing, you just should go and try them both. I think Android is very competent. In fact, I think what's happened now is it's really good news for consumers. There are good choices from every carrier. So pick the carrier first, the one that gives you the best reception, the highest speed where you are or where you're going to be with your smartphone. And then once you pick the carrier, look at their offerings. And if it's Sprint or AT&T or Verizon, you certainly will be looking at the iPhone 5. And I would compare that directly to Samsung Galaxy S3. Now, next month, well, November, we're gonna see some more phones. We're going to see the Galaxy Note 2, which if you want a ginormous phone, and I actually like a giant screen, 5.5 inches. Wow. It's easier for me to type. It's easier for me to see. But I'm an old man, so you may not. You young folks, you young people may not care that much. And then don't rule out Windows Phone. Now, Windows Phone is not as mature as Android or iPhone. The app ecosystem is nowhere near as big. And frankly, if you feel it when you use it. It feels like it did when we first got the iPhone. But it's elegant, it's beautiful, and both HTC and Nokia have very good ones. People seem to agree the HTC 8X will be the one to choose. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Let me just log on to my share file here. I love share file. You know about share file? Share file is saved my life. If you are sharing files in business, and of course that's what we do a lot of these days, whether it's designs that you're sending out or presentations, pictures, you know, anything. There are some issues that come up for business that just don't come up for normal users. Well, for one thing, you can't use email. Because email, well, you got the limitations on the file size. You get bounce backs for even something as small as a few megabytes. But also, it's not secure. You know, when you send email, it's like sending a postcard. Anybody along the way can read it. So if you have privacy requirements, federal regulations like HIPAA that you have to adhere to, email ain't not going to do it. And maybe you've tried a consumer-grade solution. That's what I was using. I won't say the name, but, I mean, you know what they are. There are a variety of these. In most cases, they're not HIPAA compliant. They have all sorts of privacy issues. Not ShareFile. Designed by Citrix to be secure, totally compliant with government regulations in many businesses, including HIPAA. And I love this because it's branded with your logo. So this is our ShareFile account, my ShareFile account. When I have to send voice tracks to the radio stations or advertisements, this is how I do it. You have an address book. There is an Outlook plugin that makes it really easy, but I'll just show you how easy it is just to send a file. I'm going to check this box. Let's say I want to send this to somebody and press the send button. It's easy in Outlook, but I'll do this from the web page. Now, you can actually create an email here to multiple addresses. You have an address book, so you can pull up the address book. You can do distribution groups, makes it easy. Or, and this is what I always do, I can make a link. Now, notice there's some settings here. Email me. These are all options. Email me when the item's been downloaded or not, you know. Require recipients to enter name and email before downloading. You can say when the download access expires. This is important. You could say it's good forever, or you can say, hey, they've got one day to get this, and that's it. You don't lose control of the files. You could say how many times it can be downloaded. So you could say this can be downloaded once for the next day. The recipient has to give me their email address before they download, and I will get an email when they've downloaded it. These things really make a difference. And after that, I click the button, send files, and I'm going to get a link. Now, as I said, you can use it in email or create an email, but I like it with a link. So this is the link. Now, let me show you what happens when they paste that link into their browser. They get a dedicated page with our logo, and you put your own logo. Obviously, it's not going to be the Twit logo. A link. They don't have to sign up. They don't even have to know it's ShareFile. They don't have to do anything, but they click that link in the email, and then they press the download button, and they download the file just like that. It is really perfect. Easy to use. Very, very secure. You never lose control. By the way, you can do ShareFile. You can send ShareFiles from your iPhone, your tablets, your Android phones. They've got clients for all the smartphones. And it's from Citrix, so you know it's secure and well-designed and by business for business. I want you to try it free for 30 days. We have a Tech Guy offer code. Click the green Try It Free button. And use the code Tech Guy, okay? You'll see that you can set up for pre-designed for a variety of industries. You don't have to choose one, but if you're in an industry, let's say you're a physician, choose medical, and then you'll get the special, you know, ShareFile medical setup. 99 of Fortune 500 companies use ShareFile. 99%, not 99, 99% of 99%. That's why ShareFile is so good. I want you to try it right now. ShareFile.com. Use the offer code TechGuy. TechGuy, okay? In the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, well, if you've got the iPhone Maps app, you might think you're in the middle of nowhere. I'm interested. I'm surprised. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm surprised at how much ink is being spilt on how bad these maps are. You know, it's just the Maps app that comes with the iPhone. There are more than a dozen very good Maps apps out there that, you know, if you're worried about this, you probably should be using. There's even a rumor, although no one's confirmed this, that Google has submitted its own revised Maps app and is waiting approval from the Apple Store. I don't know if that's true or not. I hope it's true. And if it is, well, it's just a matter of time before you get, the Google Maps back. I haven't been driving around much. I've only used the Apple Maps app a little bit, but it worked quite well. I like it that you could tell Siri things like, you know, navigate to work, and it'll do that for you. You can even say, what's my ETA? And Siri will talk to you and say, well, you'll be about 20 minutes out. That's kind of cool. But I have heard that now it's interesting because among other people, Apple is buying its map data from TomTom, the GPS company. There are two big mapping companies in the world, Navtech and Telenav. One's owned by Ericsson, Sony Ericsson, and one, or I guess it's just Ericsson, or maybe it's just Sony. I can never, somebody owns it. And the other one's owned by Nokia. And it's the basis for Nokia Maps. But they licensed that data. Google licensed that Navtech and Telenav data. In fact, you'll see it when you look at a map. Sometimes it'll say Navtech at the bottom or Telenav. Apple is not getting data from them. They're getting it from a third company, TomTom, which has been making GPSs for a long time. I love TomTom GPS, standalone GPSs. But it's new to this leasing out of its mapping data business. TomTom is very quick to say, don't blame us for the Apple Maps problem because our maps are fine. In fact, the TomTom app on the iPhone is one of the top nav apps, they say. But it's more than just the data that we provide. Apple has provided a lot of data on top of it. I think it's fine. Just understand it's a first generation map compared to the Google Maps, which have been around for a long time, and Google's invested probably at this point hundreds of millions of dollars into the quality of its maps. It's going to be tough to compete. But you don't have to use it. If you're looking for a good turn-by-turn program that's very inexpensive, I love. Motion X GPS Drive is fantastic. It uses Google Maps and Telenav and uses other maps. It does a very good turn-by-turn, a job of turn-by-turn. It's my favorite GPS app. And it's fairly inexpensive. I think the app itself is a buck or two. And then you can buy additional features like voice turn-by-turn directions and stuff. But there are many choices. There are many choices. So I think that the furor over the Apple Maps is a little misguided. Not, I don't want to defend Apple. It's not a great app, perhaps. It's new. Give it a chance. And if you don't trust it, as you probably shouldn't in some areas, then you should use a third party, and there are plenty of third party mapping apps, inexpensive and free. Actually, for driving, I almost always use the free Waze, Waze. I've recommended it before. If you live in an area where Waze is popular, it's going to give you the best at maps because it tells you when there's road hazards, it tells you when there's hidden speed traps. Are you going to Starbucks?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll have a triple tall latte. Thank you. Thank you, Greg. I know John is looking at me and said, hey, I offered to make you a coffee, but that's Starbucks. That's different. They have a clover now. I'm sorry. I'm trying to do a radio show here. Do you mind? This is fun. I love it. The Tech Guy Labs, you know, many radio stations are very sterile, quiet, calm places with soundproofing and so forth. The Tech Guy Labs is not that. It really is, you know, I don't even know what to call it. It's a place. What was I saying? Oh, Waze is a very good choice. That's free, but you do need to use data. But there are apps, GPS Drive is one of them, that will download the map data while you're in your Wi-Fi, and then when you go out in the car, it has the map data. Was I talking to Siri when I did that? Somebody said in the chat room, Biker says, are you talking to Siri when you're ordering coffee? No, it's like Siri, it's Greg. He's got a male voice, that's the only difference. The other... you know, I've heard people say, oh, the back scratches. I got the black one. I attempted to scratch it with an X-Acto knife. But when I did that, there were screams from my staff. I can hear the squeals. It's not that I'm a destructive person, but I've been reading all this. Whoa, it scratches. And I, you know what? I wasn't able to scratch it with an X-Acto knife. So, you know, maybe it scratches, but it's not, it doesn't scratch easily, this back, the black back. It's not like it's soft paint on here that you can drag something across and scratch it. Yeah, apparently Knox Harrington said, well, see, that's not a scratch, that's just as much. Knox Harrington in our chat room says, yeah, the guy who posted the pictures of being scratched used a nail. Well, okay. I mean, I don't know many consumer electronics devices that would survive a nail being dragged across it. I used an X-Acto knife. I didn't bear way down on it, but I scraped it. Nothing. So it's pretty good. I think it's anodized aluminum. It's not painted. I think it's fine. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. 8888, ask Leo. Your comments, thoughts, suggestions about the iPhone, I'd love to hear from you. Let's start with Josh in Apple Valley, California. Hey, Josh.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
Yeah, it's going great. How are you?
I'm great. Just doing a little shopping. Had a something come up, but first I wanted to say thanks for the heads up on that Waze app. It was actually very, very good app. I enjoy it.
Thank you. I can't take credit. Others have told me about it, and I've tried it. And I know, you know, if you live in an area where it's used, Apple Valley, you know, Southern California for sure, Northern California for sure, other metro areas, I'm sure, you know, it's much more useful then.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been, you know, I was traveling on the 15 freeway, and it told me where all the cops were. I enjoyed it.
I'm sure the CHP doesn't appreciate that, but... It is. It's interesting because you can, as you're driving, you can wave your hand over and speak to it and say, that, you know, there's a hidden police officer, and then that adds it to the map. And as you drive, as you get closer to say, watch out, there's a hidden police officer up ahead. But you shouldn't speed at any time, of course.
Yeah. No, it's actually, you know, it was very handy. You don't have to hold it in your hands and everything. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
So my problem is, it's not necessarily a problem. I received something. Came from notifications@gmail.com and saying that I want an iPad 2 and I just had to click this link and everything. It had all the normal monikers of something that you would expect from
Gmail.
Sure
it did. But let me explain something about email. First of all, you're right to be suspicious. Gmail is not giving you an iPad.
Exactly.
So immediately that's, you know, a red flag. I can send email from Gmail. From that address. I could send email from the White House. In fact, you can too. All you have to do is go in your email client and change the from address. There is no built-in verification in email, and that's why spam is such a problem. There's no authentication built in. It never, when they designed email way back in the dim, dark days of the internet, they didn't think this would be a problem. They didn't know about spam.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't mean where it came from. When you read the where it came from, that doesn't tell you anything. If you got really sneaky and started looking at headers, you could perhaps see where it came from. But any smart spammers hiding their source, don't buy it. Don't believe it. Google is not offering you free iPads. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Lots more to talk about with this new iPhone 5, and I will talk about the connector. Because that's kind of a problem. I got one cable. And I guess they're sold out everywhere. But that'll all ease up a little bit. Hey, guess who's here? Our home theater geek, Mr. Scott Wilkinson. He hosts a podcast on the Twit Network called Home Theater Geeks, twit.tv/HTG, every Monday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time on Twit, which is my personal podcast network. I liked them so much I bought the company. No, but I wish somebody would.
I love your voices, Leo. That's,
thank you. Thank you,
great.
Scott. Thank
oh,
you, Scott.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You sound a bit like Thurston Howell.
I love it. Let's talk home theater.
Yes.
I'm the guy who has the giant Runco speaker system. I wish I did. With that giant, what, $30,000 projection system.
Right.
Runco. So you told us last week you might have a little announcement, and why don't you do that first?
I will. I am back online. I have a new online home, at least for part of the time. It's a website called Secrets of Home Theater and Hi-Fi,
ooh,
High Fidelity. Now, that's an awfully long name, and so the URL is a bit shorter. It's HomeTheaterHiFi.com.
You know, I've seen this site and I've used it many times.
So. It's really an excellent site. You know, it's been online longer than just about anybody, 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've been online.
This is kind of one of the great home theater sites. So that's fantastic.
It is. It is. Yeah. And it's interestingly, it's family run. The head guy is a guy named John Johnson, who's a neuroscientist.
Wow.
Who's also a musician and an audiophile. And so he started this website, and his wife runs it. His daughter is the managing editor. So it's a real family-oriented business. But everywhere I went in the home theater business after I was looking for something to do, they kept saying, oh, yeah, you should talk to Secrets of Home Theater and Hi-Fi. So I did, and they have
And graciously- we just brought the site down, by the way. So you can tell them that when the site crashed, you know, on Saturday, that
right?
was you.
That was me.
That was you talking about it. I can't believe it. It got real slow and then bam, just died.
Bam.
Use guys. Well, so anyway, Scott has a question and answer column there.
I have a question and answer column there. Once a week, I will be answering listener questions. So you can email me at, you can email me any way you want, scott@techguylabs.com or Scott Wilkinson at hometheaterhifi.com. Either way, it'll get to me. And I will be answering one a week there. I'll also be doing once a month a relatively in-depth technical article. One of the hallmarks of this website is that they really go deep into tech. And that's very nice for me. I really enjoy doing that. And so if you like getting geeky like me, you will check it out because they've got some great, really, really deep technical articles, which I will now be contributing to.
Awesome. I'm so excited.
I am too.
Congratulations.
And thank you so much.
I'm sure the site will be back up soon.
I hope so.
Please, no, that's good. You see, this is to your advantage. You say, hey, you see, I bring a large audience along with me,
right.
So big that you might want to get a bigger web server.
Well, this is actually very true. And I told them, I said, hey, I'm going to make an announcement on
Saturday.
Now they believe it.
The
okay.
power of the Scott. All right, we got a question for you, Scott, from Steven.
Yes.
He's in Birmingham, Alabama. Hi, Steven.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome. Scott Wilkinson, Leo Laporte. And by the way, Scott will be hosting the show in November, I should say.
November 17th and 18th.
Yeah.
Looking forward to
it. So we'll do all home theater questions then, but this is a good time to ask. Go ahead, Steven.
Okay, thanks. My question, I'm surprised that this is not asked more often. But with my friends' TVs and when I see, you know, big flat panel televisions in stores, the picture quality is, I think, relatively poor. Like, I'll see people playing, like, a DVD going into one of these, you know, big present-day flat panel TVs, and it just looks awful. And I think the problem is, you always hear about black levels and things like that, but I think the biggest detriment is the signal processing going on in the entire, you know, source and playback chain. And I think that if you could kind of clean up this processing, and if you could maybe get something that really worked reliably, then you could get much better quality. And that's what I'm concerned about.
So, yeah, in fact, all TVs, all big screen TVs, Scott, right, have DSP processing for the signal.
Yes, sure,
and when
absolutely.
You're playing back standard definition, which is like I Love Lucy from the 50s, similar.
Or any DVD, really.
Well, DVDs are enhanced definition. So standard definition is like 400 lines of resolution. DVDs are 480p. In each, both of those cases, you have to upscale them for the
Correct.
Big screen TV, for the 1080i input to the TV. So the
Correct.
DSP processor is doing that upscaling.
Correct. And some processors do a better job than others, for sure. It's certainly one of the things I test for when I review a television is how well it does that.
Yeah.
But I think my first thought when I heard this question was when TVs are put in their box at the factory and shipped out to retailers, and the retailers take one out of the box and put it on the show floor and they turn it on, it's pre-calibrated to be too bright and too blue. And the reason is that it needs to compete on a showroom floor that's brightly lit with these Klieg lights in and amongst a wall of TVs. You go into Best Buy and you see this wall of TVs. They're all miscalibrated on purpose by the manufacturer. And when somebody buys a TV and they take it home and they take it out of the box, it's also miscalibrated in the same way because the manufacturer has no idea which one of the TVs of the 10 or 20 or 50 or 100 or 1,000 they ship to the retailer is going to be picked for the showroom floor. So they're all for that. And most people don't take the time to take any look at the menu or anything like that and set it up properly for a home environment. Now, a lot of TVs these days, when you first turn them on, they'll say, is this going to be in a store or a home? And you say, oh, it's going to be in the home. Okay, fine. That's better, but it's still not great. What I always recommend is that people take their TV when they first get it home, they open up the menu, they go to the what's called the picture menu typically, and there'll be something called mode or picture mode, and it'll probably say something like normal or standard or something like that. Switch it to movie or cinema mode. Just that one thing. Or if it's a THX certified TV, switch it to THX mode. Just that one thing will improve the picture quality dramatically over what it looks like coming out of the box. That is the first thing that came to mind when I heard this fellow's question.
But that has nothing to do with the upscaling, of course. The brightness of the screen.
Correct. The brightness of the screen and the accuracy of the colors.
Right. But what if he's seeing, and I do sometimes see this jaggies. It's funny, they usually show TVs with high-def content. And
correct.
There's no upscaling in that case. And so correct. Many TVs look fine there, but it's where you get, and we used to get this question a lot in the early days when they didn't have very good scalers. People would say, boy, I watch regular TV. It looks terrible. Partly that's because you're seeing detail you never saw before.
Well, that's not true because in the standard definition case, you're seeing detail that was never there in the first place.
Okay.
The TV is manufacturing it, and that's the process of scaling, and you're exactly right. Some TVs do a better job than others. There's nothing you can do about that except read reviews and find the TVs with the best scalers in them, or use an external scaler, something that's an external box, which is going to be pretty expensive.
Right.
And if you're buying a $400 or $500 TV, it's not worth it. But if you're buying a $30,000 Runco, it definitely is.
Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Geeks, twit.tv/HTG, and email him, scott@techguylabs.com. Thanks, Scott.
My pleasure.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-88-ASK-LEO. That's the number if you want to talk high tech, and it can be anything from a computer to a smartphone to home theater, as you can tell. We've talked about all three. William is in Puerto Rico. He's calling via Skype. Hi, William. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Greetings from Puerto Rico.
Hello. It's good to talk to you.
Well, here's a simple question. We got one of those last white MacBooks that came with Snow Leopard. And we got a bootcamp partition on one side, Snow Leopard. On the other side, we got Windows 7.
Uh-huh.
And I understand I can still upgrade the white MacBook to Mountain Lion. So the question is this. Would it rearrange the partition in some way that I would have to reinstall programs, start all over again?
No, it's a very easy upgrade. The one thing Mountain Lion does do, and I'm not sure how it handles this on an existing system, it does create a hidden recovery partition. I think it does it transparently, and it will not affect your boot camp or your main Mac partition. Everything will, you obviously came from Windows, where things like this would just screw it up all like crazy. It's not going to mess up a thing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's a very easy, straightforward upgrade. And you actually have some choices. I would recommend the choice where it takes the old system folder, it saves it, but it renames it and it puts a clean new system folder in it. Now, that's going to cause more headaches because you don't have any of the settings preserved or anything like that, or not many anyway. So you may have to go into the old system folder and copy extensions and things like that over. Actually, I'll be honest with you. Don't worry about it. Just do the upgrade in place.
Okay.
Just do the upgrade in place.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, William. Thank you so much for listening in Puerto Rico. Yeah, Apple makes that very straightforward. In general, when I talk about upgrading operating systems, you know, going from Windows 7 to Windows 8, for instance, usually I say, hey, you really ought to start over.
and erase the hard drive. Actually, that's less so. It's funny. Windows Vista to 7, no problem. Just update it. And I think Windows 7 to 8 is going to be a similarly simple upgrade. Microsoft has paid a lot of attention to that. So maybe my advice in general is changing. Used to be nuke it, start over. And it's not, if you have the time and the patience and you don't mind reinstalling apps and all that, it's not a bad idea to do that. Certainly not. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Phyllis in Mission Viejo is next.
Hello?
Hello, Phyllis. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. How are you feeling?
I'm good. What can I do for you?
I heard you ask the question.
Just ask the question. Go ahead. Ask the question because I have no idea, but maybe somebody listening does.
Okay. In my office, we use HP Server Manager on our help desk, and it contains the database of all the questions. And we can back it up on HP Server Manager, but we want to be able to export it offline so we can use it if the system crashes.
Do you not have an IT guy?
I'm IT.
You're the IT. You're the IT gal.
Right.
I'll be honest, I don't usually answer enterprise questions because I have no experience with the enterprise computing.
Right.
Okay. But let me see here. We've got Sybil, who's an expert in our chat room, and Sybil says that Access, Microsoft's Access, can usually import from just about any database if you can point to it, if you can see it. Can you see the database file?
Yes, I can see it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's one thing to do, and you probably have Access because it's part of Office Professional. Just see, right. Open Access and say, point it to the file and say, can you import this? And it may be you can just import it all.
Okay.
Now, we do have an enterprise show on my podcast network, This Week in Enterprise Tech, and we have some really good enterprise folks on there, including Father Robert Ballister, who is, I call him the Pope's IT guy. He set up Skype for the Pope. So this guy,
wow.
This guy knows his stuff. And
okay.
And I'm going to see if he can help us. But I don't know. A lot of times companies like HP will keep that data in a proprietary format to lock you in, okay. Right? They want you to keep using Service Manager, right?
That's right. That seems to be the problem, yes.
Yeah. So, and of course, they want to charge you that yearly subscription fee and the support fee and all that stuff. And I can understand you might want to get off of that. And I can also understand where they're going to make it as hard as possible. Did you call HP? Were they any help at all?
No, they weren't.
Yeah.
I think they just want to keep us.
They want to lock you in, yeah. So this is actually a great question, and it's kind of my this is the stuff I love because I don't like proprietary. I don't like lock-in, and I understand why companies do it. But it's your data. These are questions your people asked you and the information you need. It's your data, and I don't think they have a right to lock it in.
Right. Okay.
So
now you said you have another show that I could.
Well, it's not a radio show. It's a podcast. But it's on Mondays. It's called This Week in Enterprise Tech. And it is a really great show for... Hey John, does Twyatt have an email address? Does Twyatt have an email address that she could send an email to? Because that's a great question.
Okay, great.
I'm gonna keep listening, Phyllis, all right? I'm going to find out. Padre SJ, who's normally in our chat room, he's the... we call him Friar Tech. The Pope's IT guy, I think that's not fair. I think the Holy Father has his own entire IT department, but Father Ballister is in the Society of Jesus. He's a Jesuit, and they call them God's Marines. And I think that when it comes time for extra special support, he'll swoop in. You could also go to the HP support forums and ask. HP may delete those questions though, right? Yeah, it's not right. But you are using a proprietary system, so she's using it for support questions, right, and answers, and it's probably a ticket system, and you decided you don't want to pay the yearly subscription fees, but you've got all the data in their proprietary database. How do you get it out? Our chat room is saying that they believe it's a SQL Server. If it is SQL Server, Access should be able to open it up and get it out of there. You should be able to get it out. So, well, keep listening. I bet you, Phyllis, I bet you somebody who's listening knows a little bit about it. Vin Man says, switch to Jira and move on. Is Jira open source? Yeah, it'd be nice to get an open source system. Then it'd be open data. You'd be able to move around. That's why I'm a big fan of that and less of a fan of proprietary systems. Kaylee, Riverside, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing, sir?
I'm great, Kaylee. It's Kali?
It's Kali.
Kali. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Hey, I have a question about the screen. It called it a soundboard, but I don't even know where I would begin, whether it's something like a keyboard or some sort of computer program.
Hang on the line, and I'll tell you what. We're going to take a news break, and I'll come back. You'll be first in line. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk computers, cell phones, home theater, the internet, and all that jazz. There's lots of it. Anything with a chip in it, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Questions, comments, suggestions. We're talking a lot about the iPhone 5. I tell you, I would not rush to upgrade, partly because of this new connector. I have to throw out a bunch of, not just cables, but actually docks. And the new connector doesn't do some of the things the old connector did. For instance, and we're not sure about this. Now that it's out, I guess we'll know soon. If you have a BMW, and I think some Mercedes, some fancy cars have iPod docks in them. I didn't know that. 30-pin connectors. Of course, this new iPhone doesn't have that. Apple does sell an adapter. Won't be available till next month. And they're saying iPod control is not included in the adapter. That means that if you have a car that you connect to the iPod and you're able to control the iPod from an interface in the car, that's going to go away.
I don't like that.
I really don't like that. I've spent hundreds of dollars on it. I have a clock that the iPhone docks into. I have a Sonos system that has an iPod dock. None of that stuff's going to work anymore, even with an adapter. There's also, right now, a shortage of cables. That means I have one and only one cable that will charge this phone. That's not good. That's not good at all. And I have to say, I could tell these cables are going to be very problematic over time, because as nice as it is, this new 9-pin connector, Apple decided not to use one that's industry standard. They, of course, they want their own connector. They say it's for technical reasons. I believe them. And certainly there's one thing that's nice about it. Unlike USB, it's reversible. You can put it in either way. It's fine. But it clicks in there solid, and it's in there. And I know that it's a little tiny thing to grip, so it's going to be, people are going to be pulling on those wires, and that's going to separate soon. So be very, if you get a new iPhone, be very careful with that cable, because that's the one and only cable you're going to be able to get for some time. Apparently the Apple stores are sold out. It's elegant, it's beautiful, and I'm sure that we'll start seeing docks and stuff that support it, but it's going to be an ugly transition. That's Apple, isn't it? It's a beautiful phone. It's a work of art. It's gorgeous. And it's thin and light. Screen is gorgeous. It is, I think, increasingly, it's kind of like the B&O. Remember, that's the sound company that does high-priced, gorgeous stuff. It's for a specialized audience. I think more and more the iPhone is going to be like that. It's kind of an elegant thing for people who want a status symbol. Because technically, I don't think it's going to be the top phone for very long. Right now, it is the fastest phone on the market. But I think that's all, that's a temporary lead. And since Apple only updates once a year, it's not going to hold that lead very long. It's a beautiful screen, but other screens are gorgeous. It's the fit and finish, the feel, even the connector. It's elegant. it's precious, says B2 in our chat room. I think that's true. It's precious. my advice, and I'll reiterate what I said last hour if you're just tuning in. If you have an older iPhone, even an iPhone 4 that you're ready to upgrade, it's probably worth the upgrade. It's certainly, getting Siri would be worth the upgrade. If you have an iPhone 4S, it's questionable.
It's only one icon row bigger. It's faster. I don't think you'll notice that. The only compelling reason to get this is if you're in an LTE area with your carrier, Verizon, AT&T, or Sprint. Because the LTE is really, really fast. I'm getting amazing speeds on my internet connections. Not Wi-Fi, but, you know, out in the field. The 3G or 4G, in this case, data connections are really, really good. So if you're, you know, you're in the iPhone universe and you're ready to upgrade, that would be a good reason to do it. But it's not so much better than the iPhone 4S that I would jump. And I would get iOS 6 for the iPhone 4S. That Siri does have some nice improvements. But don't feel like you need to get the new phone. Now, the other question, everybody says iPhone 5 versus, let's say, the Samsung Galaxy S3. And that's a very personal choice. I'm going to use the iPhone 5 for a few weeks. I'll have a better sense. I'll let you know what I use. But it's just me, right? I like the Galaxy S3 a lot. Bigger screen. I like a bigger screen. I really like having that real estate. And this is not that big a screen. Certainly, it's 4 inches, but it's tall and thin. So it doesn't have a lot of screen real estate compared to, say, a Galaxy S3, and certainly not compared to, say, the new LG Optimus or the Galaxy Note 2. That's a big. Those are 5.5-inch and bigger screens. They're huge. Camera's great. Better low light performance. Excellent. The panorama is fantastic. But these are all small improvements over the iPhone 4S. And if you have a 4S and you're happy, I'd say stay with it unless you want that LTE. So that's just to reiterate my advice. And as far as iPhone versus Android, well, that's a personal decision you're going to have to make. I'll probably go back to Android because I like bigger screens. And I like a lot of the features of Android. So before the break, a colleague called from Riverside, California, and we had to take the news break. Thank you for your patience, colleague. What can I do for you?
Hey, no problem, Leo. Hey, Bang & Olufsen, was that the brand?
Yeah, Bang & Olufsen. Beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
Elegant. But you pay a price. I think that Apple's rapidly becoming the Bang & Olufsen of phones.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's a gorgeous phone.
Yeah, but I use another brand on Android anyway. So.
Yeah, and I think a lot of stereophiles would say, well, you could pay a lot for B&O, but you're going to get better sound from other devices. They just won't look as cool. And I think it's similar with the iPhone. Now, you're going to get, in many ways, a better phone with Android. But that's a personal choice that everybody has to make for themselves. I cannot make that choice for you.
Right. Yeah, I used to be a Windows phone guy, but then I went straight to Android afterwards. And
yeah. The new Windows phone is worth taking a look. Windows Phone 8 looks great. And the HTC 8X, which they announced this week, my Windows guys, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, who do our Windows podcast, both say that's the phone to beat. Not the Nokia Lumia 920, but the new HTC 8X looks beautiful.
I'll have to give it a look. They're going to be on AT&T.
Say again?
They're going to be on AT&T?
Yes, AT&T.
Okay, I'll probably take a look. Yeah. Hey, but no, for real, this is my question, and it's about radio. When I'm listening to certain radio shows, they're able to produce sounds or words,
yeah,
or phrases at the drop of a dime. Like,
yeah, whoop, donk, damp, yeah.
Right, but it's also, you know, words or, you know, even a long phrase or maybe even a 30-second drop.
Right. I'll tell you the truth. Most radio shows that do a lot of that have a dedicated engineer running a board, as this show does, Kyle Benham. And they have cart machines. They look like 8-track tapes, and they can play on the dime, and they'll slam these cart machines in. Now, they are getting more sophisticated. And, for instance, do you have an iPad?
I do not. I have an Android phone, and I have a laptop, but I could get an iPad. That was one thing we had thought about. We were trying to figure out the cheapest way to do it, whether it's going to be some sort of touch screen or...
Are you doing a radio show?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, so I think more and more, and now I know I'm not up on what the morning guys use these days, but I think there are some great, these are called sound boards or sound effects devices. There's one for the iPad I've used from a company called Rogue Amoeba that is an iPad app that lets you assign sounds to pages, and you can have, I think, many, many pages. I'm not sure what the limitation is. And it's a really cool way of playing back sound effects instantly.
Mm-hmm.
Instantly.
Being able to kind of repeat them or stop them or pause them.
Yep. You can even play multiple sounds together. You can mix them.
So there are a number of devices like that. Is it Rogue Amoeba? Maybe it's not Rogue Amoeba. Now I'm just looking. Let me find the name of the company for you. So that's one way of doing it. And then there is dedicated hardware. But I think an iPad would give you a lot of features. Hold on a second. We'll talk some more. So you want the iPhone 5? Maybe you want the Samsung Galaxy S3. Maybe you just say, I want to get a new computer, a new laptop. What do you do with the old one? You get money for it at Gazelle, gazelle.com. The best way to recycle old gear is to go to gazelle.com. Do it right now, even if you're not sure, because you can get a quote that's good for 30 days. If you go to gazelle.com, let's say I got my iPhone 4S, want to trade it in to AT&T, it's 32 gigs, 250, what? If it's flawless, $259. Now you throw it in a box, and Gazelle pays the postage for anything worth more than a buck. They pay the postage. Might as well put a lot of stuff in that box. What else you got you want to get rid of? Apple products, computers, iPods, iPads, cell phones. You want to get the new iPod Touch? Get rid of the old iPod Touch. How about that? See how much that's worth. I got a 64 gig. Good condition? Yes. Engraving? No. Let's see how much it's worth. Calculate. $81. That's good. Throw that in the box. They pay the postage. You get the cash. Now, oh, by the way, you can get a check. You can get a PayPal credit, but you can also get an Amazon gift card. That's what I do because they bump the Amazon gift cards by another 5%. Oh, Lepton in our chart room, you're so smart. He listened to this ad, and he locked in his price at Gazelle for his 4S, got $320. See? That's the way you do it. Money for nothing, and your chicks for free. Gazelle has paid, well, I don't know about the chicks part, but you can get the money for the old gadgets. How about that? Gazelle's paid almost $50 million to over 300,000 customers. Their data experts will wipe it, so you don't have to worry about that. And sometimes they even send you more than they said. They say, hey, you know, this is worth more than we thought. I love it. Gazelle, GAZELLE.com. It's the best way to recycle those old gadgets so you can get the new stuff. Kali's on the radio. You couldn't find the words to say. Are you going to do a morning show, Kali? You still there? Did I lose him?
I'm still here.
All right. Are you doing a morning show? What are you going to do?
No, it's a time show. It goes from like 8 o'clock at night to 9 o'clock at night, and that's the most we can afford right now, so we get some advertising.
Radio is so much fun. I just love it.
It is fun. That's why I'm doing it. You know, a couple of us doing it, and we're having a blast at it.
It's a great medium for performance because you only have to do the audio. And it's the brain, I don't think people understand this, but the brain is much better at building sets than the best Hollywood set designer. So if you can play on people's imaginations and create in their mind the place where you are and what's going on, it'll look better than any movie ever did. And that's what I love about radio.
The problem is our signal is so weak at nighttime that we don't get out very far, so we have to use other means. We're on the internet too.
This is the future, you know.
Yeah, hopefully they can hear us on. There's probably more listeners on the internet than there
absolutely.
Is.
There will be absolutely, and that's what's changing. Radio is internet radio. It means anybody who's good, who's talented, who's creative has a chance to make a name for themselves and go on from there. Look, you know, watch Howard Stern's movie or read his book about the struggles that he went through. He wouldn't have had to do any of that if he just did it on the internet and, you know, and all of a sudden people discover him, and then he wouldn't have to do any of that.
There's a lot of media to filter through, though, these days.
Yeah, well, that's the competition, right? But if that's the key, you got to be good.
Yeah, yeah.
So let me see if I can help you, at least with the sound effects. While we were in the break, the chat room went crazy with this, and we've got a lot of solutions for you. So on the iPad, there is a really great app, and I said the wrong company. I was saying Rogue Amoeba. It's another company that makes software, audio software for the Mac called Ambrosia, and their app for the iPad is called Soundboard. It's very simple but very fast and powerful. It does what you want, stop and start sounds. You create a soundboard with the sound effects attached to it, and you just tap the button, and it plays instantly. So that's $20, but you need an iPad for that. So that's one. I'm going to tell you a bunch of them here, Kali. This is
okay.
In radio stations, apparently, and I can't thank Foxbert for this, they often use, and I have seen these, a hardware device. I'm not sure I'd recommend this, but it's designed for radio. It's from 360systems.com, called the Instant Replay. And it's kind of the same idea. It's a sound bank with buttons, and you just tap them, and it plays. But I bet you it costs more than an iPad plus the software on an iPad, and you don't get an iPad. Right. It's just that's all it does. And then another person recommended, since you said you have a Mac, right?
I do not. I have an Android phone and a laptop, a regular PC laptop.
A Windows laptop. Okay, so the Mac program was QLab, and then I forgot what the Windows recommendation was. Was it called Soundboard? There's a Windows app that will do this as well. So there are a lot of choices.
I like the iPad method.
I would go with the iPad. Apparently, Howard Stern uses the Instant Replay, according to Foxbert. He has two of them. Fred's using them.
Okay, so there's a few. There's Ambrosia, and then there's the other one.
The iPad app is Ambrosia. I love it. I highly recommend it. There are free apps as well. Boy, I hope, you know, James DeRuvo, who's doing our show notes. James, I hope you're writing down all these recommendations so we can put them all in the show notes at techguylabs.com. And that, Kali, I would go back there in a day or two and look.
I will. Thank you.
Hey, good luck. What's the name of the show?
Lion's Tent Radio.
I like it. And it's on just a local small station, like a public or a college station?
No, it's a regular station, and it's just a really small signal. Really
yeah,
small
you
signal.
buy the time. Smaller stations do that a lot. They sell the time. Yeah. Well, good. Yeah, and where can we find you on the internet? Do you have an internet site yet?
Well, if you don't want to talk about the station exactly, we could say Lions 10 Radio on Facebook.
That's better. Yeah, I don't want to mention the radio station because I'm sure it's in competition with whatever radio station we're on in that area.
Yeah,
you know I don't. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me, but we got to be nice to our affiliates.
Right. Makes sense.
Lions Tent Radio on Facebook.
Yeah.
Hey, good luck, colleague. Stay in touch.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. Take care. Okay.
You too. Good luck. If you're ever up in the San Francisco Bay Area, look me up. Come, I'll show you my studio. It's fun. To build castles in people's mind is fun. Adam in Alva, Oklahoma, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Adam.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm a big fan. I'm looking at, or trying to find, actually, a tape to MP3 converter for my Mac.
Do you have a cassette player?
I do. But it's so old, it tears up my tapes.
Well, yeah, don't use that then. And do this soon, because what happens with all tapes, whether it's reel-to-reel or cassette, is as they age, and it doesn't take very long, they get brittle. The Mylar backing starts to lose adhesion to the fiber, the iron particles, and it starts to iron oxide starts to shed off. And pretty soon you can't play them back, so you will lose them. Yeah. They decay over time, so you got to convert it to digital where you'll never lose it again. I would the cheapest thing to do is get a cassette player, and take the audio out of it and put it into the sound audio in on your Mac and just record it.
Okay, is there any USB?
Yes. What you're doing is you're converting analog audio, that's what's on the cassette, into digital bits. And you can either do it using the Mac's built-in digital to analog, or rather analog to digital converter. It's called its sound card. Or you can get an external DAC and have it do it. And there's a lot of companies. Griffin makes the iMic. That's the cheapest one out there, and it's decent. In fact, that's what I use to record to my Macintosh for the radio show. So it's certainly good enough. Griffin iMic, it's from Griffin Technologies, and it is $24 at griffintechnology.com. And so that's USB, and you'll just connect the cassette. But you still need a cassette player, right? So you need some way to play that cassette back. But the iMic will take is actually a good way to do this. I mean, the Mac has its own technology, you know, own sound card, and it'll do it. But this is what we use, frankly, for my audio recordings, and it's great. It's a Griffin iMic, $40 list from Griffin, but if you shop around, Amazon, I think, has it for $25. And one of the reasons I like it is it has a switch on it that lets you choose between line-level input and mic-level input. And you'll be using line-level input. In fact, if you can find a cassette player that has a line out, that's even better. Otherwise, you'll be getting the headphone jack, and that's going to be a little bit less good. Kay Wierso in our chat room points me to an Amazon link for an all-in-one unit that does that. I think you've already got a computer. You don't need to do anything more than that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Taking questions at 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. of A. Outside the U.S., call me with Skype. Robert's in Gilbert, Arizona, our next caller. Hey, Robert, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I'm having difficulty with my Wi-Fi connection. I'm on DSL with the CenturyLink Netgear router and Dell Inspiron. And I'll be just browsing with the Google Chrome, and all of a sudden, you know, everything will slow down. Like a page won't load. I'll hear my fan come on. And when I look at the task manager, there's a program called Service Host, I guess, SVC.
Yeah, that's normal. That's a normal program.
Okay, if I kill that, boom, everything, you know, loads right up and it's fine.
Yeah, well, what you're killing is whatever's using Service Host. So, how old is the computer?
About 4 years.
How much RAM do you have? How fast is it?
Gosh, I don't know. It's probably like, I want to say 512.
Yeah, that sounds very low. So
Windows 7, Intel Core.
But it's not got to be more than 512 megs of RAM, I hope.
Yeah, I would think so.
if it's not, that's your problem. So services are things running in the background, like indexing and so forth. You can examine what services are running, and you can see what it is that is you can at least get an idea of what it is that's taking up cycles. If it's running an index, which sometimes does, Windows has a bad habit of starting to index the hard drive at very inopportune moments. It's not supposed to do it when you're busy. But that's one thing. So that could be the indexing service. So here's the deal. If you want to see what services there are in general, you can just right-click My Computer, select Manage. You're going to open up the Management Console, click the Services tab, and you'll see a list of all the services running. That's only going to tell you what services are there. You want to make sure that there's nothing not so nice running. But there's something that's a reasonable thing to worry about, but it, you know, Windows does this enough on its own that it's not necessarily a cause for concern.
I'm running ESET, and then I think Windows Defender is automatically running.
No, that's all right. Again, it depends. If you don't have enough RAM, running anything is going to slow you down.
Right.
So you should see how much RAM you have. If you don't have 4 gigs of RAM, 4 gigabytes of RAM. Now, there's storage, which is your hard drive, and there's RAM, which is a chip memory that the data and the running applications live in, and there has to be enough.
Is there a quick way to check that?
If you right-click again on My Computer, you should see all the system capabilities, the processor speed, the amount of RAM, stuff like that. The other thing you can download, there's a really great program from a guy who I just think the world of, named Mark Rasinovich, on Microsoft's site. It's called Process Explorer. And you can run that, and you'll see what things are running.
Okay.
And so you can actually watch as things start running. Now, your browser takes up a lot of CPU cycles. Displaying graphics and stuff is actually a very time-consuming, you know, CPU-consuming thing. The service host that could be running, it could be running a lot of things. Windows indexing is one that's just kind of a nightmare. Really will slow your machine down. And if that's it, you might want to...
When I look at the percentage of the CPU that's running, it's not very much.
Oh, well, that's good news. Then it may be a lack of RAM.
Okay, I'm 2 gigabytes. So
yeah, 2 gigabytes is okay. It's not great.
Okay. All right. We have a
guy in our chat room who works at Microsoft. He says, here's what you do.
Oh, okay.
Run the task manager. You can do that by Control-Alt-Delete. But you want to get the task manager running and click the processes tab, because this is kind of like the sysinternals program, only it's you've already got it. And then click on the service host process, the SVC-HOST process.
Okay.
And right-click on it and go to services. It'll show the services that are running and how much processor they're using. And that will give you some idea of what's using up a lot of the...
Okay.
For 2 gigs, it shouldn't be slowing down with 2 gigs, but, it just depends on, what's going on and how busy it is.
I don't really do anything except browsing and listening to you.
Yeah, you know, the fan coming on means that your CPU is ramping up.
Right.
So it means something's working. And the one that's notorious for this is the disk indexer, the Windows indexer. It's just a notorious. So see if that's running. If it is, kill it instead of service host. Let the other services continue. See if that helps. When you kill service host, you're killing all the background services. Some of those you don't want to kill.
Probably. That's my big hammer.
Hey, it works, though. Nothing wrong with that. And you are killing. You're killing the antivirus, and all that stuff, too.
Oh. Is the Samsung Galaxy Reverb, is that a decent phone like that? Was it the
Galaxy Reverb? Let me look at this one because there's Samsung has so many dang names. Which carrier is this on?
And so I don't know if it's the same as the one you like. What is it?
I like the S3, but the S2 is quite good. The Reverb is going to be on Virgin Mobile. It looks like as Sprint as well.
Yeah, I like paying that little.
Yeah, no, I do too. And let me look at what it is here. Yeah, it's it's kind of a low end Android phone. It's a single core processor. It's probably inexpensive, but remember, I think a lot of times people pay attention to the price up front, and free versus $200 or $50 versus $200. Yeah, that's $150, but remember, you're paying $80 or $90 a month. The real price of a smartphone is not the upfront cost. So, my choice over this would absolutely be the Galaxy S3. That's a great phone. And it's much more powerful than this. It's got a much bigger display, much higher resolution, more memory, et cetera, et cetera. Better camera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, be nice to yourself. Spend a little bit more. Get something a little bit higher end. Jared in Whittier, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jared.
Hi, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Good. I'm having a problem with Google Voice.
Okay.
I fully transferred over to Google Voice.
Love it. I'm a big Google Voice user. In fact, I use it for my home phone with an Obi-Hi.
Okay. Right. I use it for my cell phone now. That's the primary.
Yep. When I give out a number, I don't give out an actual cell phone number. I give out a Google Voice number because I change cell phones faster than many people change their underwear. Well, they ought to change it more often, but that's just the way it is.
Well, the problem I'm having now is, they just haven't updated it. They said, or at least it seemed like they're going to add MMS and other things, and they haven't.
So there's some limitations. Yeah, if you text, you can only text text. You can't text pictures. MMS is dying, though. You understand the reason that they're not rushing to support MMS is because if people want to send rich text instead of text, you should use, Messenger, Google Messenger, Facebook Messenger. Just use another program. I'm very happy with Google Voice. It is free, remember. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our musical director, Kyle Benham, puts together a playlist of all the songs he's played during the show, odd though they may be.
and posts it on his Google Plus account, KYLEBENHAM, or just, you know, get it from the Tech Guy Labs site after the show's over. We'll put it there, techguylabs.com. This is episode 911 for 922-2012. So, Jared, we're going to continue on. It says he's unhappy with Google Voice. It's not moving on in the way you thought. So what can I do to help you, Jared?
I would like to know, you know, if there's something else out there that's kind of like that's simpler.
Not free, but there's lots of stuff out there that does the same thing, but nothing free.
True. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, you know, Google Voice is a great free service, but it's not nearly as sophisticated as the paid services, things like Grasshopper.com. We use Ring Central. It's more of a business system. Grasshopper is an individual can buy, you know, an 800 number or I believe you can transfer your Google Voice number over, and it will do many of the same kinds of things and more. That's two companies: Ring Central, Grasshopper. Maybe the chat room has some other suggestions for. You know, what do you use Google Voice for? You said you have one number, which is nice, and that would ring your home phone, your cell phone, your office phone if you want. Messages are taken by Google Voice and transcribed. You get an email and a text with a transcription, and they will email you the audio, which is nice in your email, so you can listen back or put it on your smartphone. You can use Google Voice to make inexpensive long-distance calls free to the U.S. and Canada and very, very cheap to the rest of the world. What else? What other features are you looking for? You said you want MMS.
Yes, I would like to use MMS. And I think my biggest problem is when I text, a lot of times the text won't go through. It'll go through a couple hours later.
Yeah. I've noticed that sometimes Google Voice is not the most reliable. And that's not good.
Yeah, that's the main one that I try to fix. So I've been trying to have it so it texts me so it actually texts my phone, and then when I can reply back, it'll show us my Google Voice number. But I'm trying to figure out a way if I can, text Google, through actual texting, and it'll just forward that text and have it appear as my, as my Google Voice number.
I do not know what else is out there that would do that.
Okay.
Great. Wordsworth in our chat room has given us an article from digitized.com, Google Voice Alternatives. Somebody's done some work. Phone booth free. Oh, yeah, Twilio has been around for a while. I forgot about Twilio. Open VBX, Line 2, Send Hub, Text Plus. But, these are only, none of them do everything Google Voice does, but there's a couple there's a couple of choices. Google Voice was acquired. It was originally Grand Central. It was acquired by Google, and they haven't done much since they acquired it. I would love to see them do more. Phone booth. It sounds like Phone Booth does a lot of the similar things for business. That might be one to look at.
Okay, I'll definitely take a look at that.
Yeah. In fact, I this is a good question. I'd love to find something. I would be willing. $5 a month, $10 a month to get all the features of Google Voice, but be more reliable. Add some more things like that.
Yeah, that's basically what I'm looking for. Overall, I think I've been pretty happy with Google Voice. I mean, my favorite thing I use it for is texting while on the computer.
Right.
That's probably
Yeah, I love that capability. I use a program, if you use an Android phone, that works great with Android phones, that allows you to do exactly that. It's called Mighty Text. It integrates right, it's free, and it integrates right into your Android phone. By a Mighty Text app on the Android phone, and then it works just like your regular text. It's not like Google Voice, it's not a separate thing.
Okay.
I love Mighty Text.
Yeah, and that actually brings up another question. Like most people, my contract just came up, so I'm trying to figure out, who do I go to next? Do I want to stay with Android or go with iPhone or Windows? Since I'm a Google Voice, addict.
I think if you're a Google Voice addict, or even a Google Voice refugee, Android is a much better choice than the iPhone. For instance, this Mighty Text
can't. I asked them, I said, when are you doing an iPhone version? They said, can't, never can, because Apple, to protect its users, does not allow any app to see SMS.
Really?
Yeah, only Apple can read and write to the text messages. That's different on Android. On Android, there's a programmer's interface, an API to SMS, so you can put an app in there that will can write text messages and read text messages and all that. Apple, of course, doesn't allow that because they got everything locked down. And really, that's the big choice to me. It's kind of not an obvious choice, and maybe it's even more too technical for most people, but the real choice, in my opinion, between iPhone and an Android phone is not about the look and feel and the screen size and the processor. It's about the philosophies. Apple believes in really locking it down, in controlling everything. They want to control the user experience. You cannot put an app on an iPhone unless Apple approves it, things like that. Android is an open system, open source. It's more chaotic in, you know, but it's more from a political or I guess it's political point of view. It's more free. So that's, to me, that's really the difference. It's a philosophical difference. It's Apple's way or the highway.
That's very true.
And in this case, the highway would be Android.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'd hate to say goodbye to Google Maps as well. So.
Well, there you go. Although, again, Google will, I'm sure, put a Maps app on iPhone that will probably be better than the one that was on it. You know, people don't know this, but the Maps app on the iPhone and the YouTube app on the iPhone were not from Google. Apple wrote them to interface to Google's systems, but they did not keep them as advanced as the versions that were available on Android, which Google wrote. Apple did not build in turn-by-turn directions, for instance, even though Google did on their Android product. Google did not maintain the apps program or the YouTube program on iOS. That was Apple. And, you know, if Google is allowed, and it really is up to Apple here, if Google's allowed to put a Maps app back on the iPhone, it'll be better. It'll be better for everybody. But Apple may well block it. We don't know. The rumor is that Google has already submitted it. I wouldn't be surprised. We just don't know. Google's not really talking. They don't want to piss anybody off. And Apple's not saying much either. So we don't know. But I suspect that we will see at some point a Google Maps app that will be probably better than the Maps app that's really a version 1.0 on the new iPhone. One thing that people have been asking me in the chat room to mention, apparently, you know, people often say, well, I'm going to travel. Which carrier should I buy my phone from? And generally, I will say get a GSM phone, either from T-Mobile or AT&T, because that's the system used around the world. But here's something very interesting. Apparently, I have to think this was intentional, the Verizon iPhone is capable of both the CDMA technology that Verizon and Sprint use and GSM. It is a true world phone. And Verizon did an interesting thing. They did not lock the GSM SIM chip. So you can buy a Verizon iPhone 5, use it in the States, and then when you go overseas, you could either use Verizon's SIM chip, or you can put in a SIM chip from a carrier in the country you're visiting, and often get much more affordable voice, text, and data. Verizon did not lock that SIM slot. AT&T does, but not Verizon. So now my recommendation has to change. If you're traveling, and you, I would say get a Verizon iPhone 5. You get the best of both worlds. I wonder if that's an oversight. I don't know. My suspicion is not. Very, very interesting. 8888 Ask Leo. Oh, real quickly before we head to the news break, and I do have many more calls, including Mike in North Hollywood who wants to switch out his old hard drive with a new drive. I do have to mention our...
Just 20 seconds.
I only have 20 seconds. All right. Well, we'll just save that. We'll save that, and we'll save Mike for the next hour, because I'm running out of time. Our website is techguylabs.com. We've got all the information about everything I talk about there. Another hour to come on the Tech Guy Show. Oh, and today, as we have been over the last couple of weeks, and we'll continue to do so, I'm going to continue for an hour after the show, because I'm recording ahead for a vacation I'm going to take in November. So if you've had trouble getting through before, this is a good time to get through to the Tech Guy. Not this hour, but the hour after. We're going to continue to take calls. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. If you have a question, comment, a suggestion, 8888 Ask Leo. So before the break, I was talking a little bit about the fact that Verizon has apparently not locked the SIM slot on its iPhone 5. That means, yeah, somebody said in the chat room, you mean, wait a minute, I could buy an iPhone from 5 from Verizon and then pop in an AT&T SIM and use it on AT&T? You could. What you would not get is LTE because that's a Verizon LTE phone. But and that's, by the way, the same in Europe. You wouldn't get fourth generation data speeds because the Verizon LTE frequencies are unique to the U.S. But you'd be able to use it as a phone, and you'd get 3G. I don't know, oversight in, or a secret marketing trick. I don't know. My suspicion, because it was discovered so fast, my suspicion is Verizon told somebody, said, yeah, by the way, have you noticed? You ever try putting somebody else's SIM in there? The problem with the SIM on the iPhone 5 is it's not a normal SIM card. The SIM cards are those, they're little tiny electronics cards that you put in a GSM phone to give it its identity. It's actually your account is on that SIM, your phone number, everything. So well, that's nice. It only works on AT&T and T-Mobile in the U.S. or around the world on GSM-compatible phones. But it's nice because it means that, you know, the phone, you know, you get another phone, you just pop in the SIM. And now it's your phone. Changes the number and everything. In order to make these world phones, Verizon had to offer a SIM capability. But the SIMs in the iPhone 5 are not traditional size SIMs. They're not even the micro SIMs of the iPhone 4 and 4S. They're actually nano SIMs. Not compatible with anything else in the world, I think. Although Apple has been able to kind of force nano SIMs down the standard body's throat, and I guess everybody's going to be using nano SIMs, or many phones will start using nano SIMs. Mike in North Hollywood, California, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for hanging on, Mike.
Thanks for taking my call, Leo.
Sure.
Okay. So I had a computer for like 2.5 years, and it just quit starting up.
Okay.
Okay. So my idea, and I have the new computer that I haven't opened in the box. My idea is I have another computer, very similar, same operating system. It went up on memory. It's got a better processor, but same company. If I take the old hard drive and put it in the new computer, will I have all that my information back
up? Yeah, all your information will be there. Windows may not like it.
What do you mean?
Well, Windows may not like it. It may not work. So, okay, there's two problems. First of all, despite the fact that it's similar, it's not identical. That means drivers are different. So you could put Windows in there, and it may some things may not work. And if they're kind of critical things, like let's say the video card, it might be a little tricky to get it working. But in all likelihood, you're fine. You'd start up. What I would recommend is the first time you start in safe mode. Or before you take I guess the computer's not working anymore. I was going to say, before you take the hard drive out, you know, delete the drivers. But that's fine. Just start up in safe mode and remove drivers for devices that have changed and let Windows plug and play the new drivers. You should be all right. The other issue is going to be the Windows activation. See, Microsoft builds code in because they know you're a pirate. They know we're all just a bunch of thieves. So they build into Windows, all versions of Windows, something called Windows Genuine Advantage. Nobody's advantage except Microsoft's. What it does is it checks to see if you're installing a copy of Windows on a different machine. And Microsoft's not been very clear about what makes a machine a different machine. But usually it's what you've done is definitely a different machine. And usually it's enough to just change a few components on an existing machine before Windows Genuine Advantage gets upset. Now, in that case, Windows will say, you're pirating me. I'm only going to run for 30 days, and then I'm going to stop running. So what you could do is call Microsoft and throw yourself at the mercy of the company and say, hey, look, I changed a few things. Can you give me a new Windows Genuine Advantage? And then you'd be able to, a new serial number, you'd be able to reactivate it. Technically, you're not Microsoft. If you told Microsoft, I took the hard drive out of an old machine that Windows was licensed to and put in a new one, Microsoft's licensing it per hardware. So it would technically, you need to buy a new copy of Windows. So, which Microsoft will be glad to sell you. So those are the two things you're going to run into. Driver's problems, those are not insurmountable. And copy protection problems, that may be a little tricky. You tell Microsoft, replace the motherboard. You might get around it. The other option, and maybe this would be a better idea, Mike, is to use the hard drive that came with a new computer, which already has Windows installed, and put the old hard drive in as a second drive. If it's a desktop computer, that's easy. If it's a laptop, you can't do it. But if it's a desktop computer, put it in as a second drive. Then everything will be there. But you won't have this issue of copy protection. Try it, Mike. What could go wrong? It might be a little hair pulling for a little bit. It wouldn't be too hard. Generally, Microsoft's pretty forgiving on this kind of thing. Brian, and then you buy Windows 8 and you're set. Brian in Simi Valley, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, good afternoon, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Brian?
Fine, thank you. Thank you so much for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for hanging on.
No sweat. I've got a little dilemma. I spent about 4 years developing a website that we launched about 30 days ago, and we're now ready to try to get the word out, and we're considering search engine optimization, but I heard there was a lot of shady...
There are, and it's risky. Because if you overdo it, you can get blocked on Google and then you disappear.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
You don't want to screw it up.
You
can certainly... So here's Google's answer. There's no such thing as search engine optimization. Make the best site you can, put the best content on it you can, and we will rank you accordingly. And then there's the SEO answer, which is, hey, we got to pay us $1,000. We'll put you number one in the search results. That's a little risky, but there is an in-between state, some of which you can do yourself, some of which a legitimate SEO person can really help you with. People know that the first 1,500 letters on your website are the most important to Google. They know that the title of the page is ranked more highly than text elsewhere on the page, the title of the page. Google absolutely pays attention to how many other legitimate sites link to you. So the higher ranked the site's linking to you, the higher your ranking will be.
Yeah, and our site's not the type that I foresee a lot of other sites linking to us, although I could be totally wrong about that.
There's not a black and white answer to the SEO question. There certainly is SEO that's so aggressive that it's risky. Link farms, things like that. Google considers that spam.
Yeah, and I definitely do not want to get that reputation.
No.
You said there were some legitimate avenues that we might be able to pursue. Is it something that you could say on the air that could probably help me and probably a lot of others as well?
Yeah, in fact... Google has a document that you should read. And we'll put the link in the show notes for SEO, how to optimize your page. And then there's a great site, searchengineland.com, that has lots of good information. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the question. The phone number if you've got a question. 8888-ASK-LEO. SEO is an interesting topic, and I've even spoken to SEO conferences. So, SEO is not always a black hat. It's not always illegitimate, but you got to be careful. Got to be careful. Let's go to Vicky in San Diego. She's our next caller. Hi, Vicky. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hi, Vicky. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. What can I do for you?
Okay, I have this major project going on. I've been scanning old family photos over the last few days, and I've scanned hundreds and hundreds of them.
Great.
I have thousands more to go.
Okay.
All of a sudden today, I start on my project, and suddenly, somehow, the dimension and the file size of the photos are different.
Hmm. Magically, huh?
I didn't change anything on my computer.
Is this on stuff you already scanned, or is this on the new stuff you're scanning?
It's just new stuff that
okay.
I started.
It probably just reset itself to the default settings or something like that.
Well, I have a Canon multifunction scanner, and I went back and I looked all the settings, and they were, you know, the same. But I reset them and set them back to what they should be, and it didn't work.
In other words, it's not scanning at that resolution.
That's correct.
But it used to.
When it first started happening this morning, I thought, that's bizarre. So I would rescan, and after two or three attempts, it would scan to the normal size that I wanted. But now it's not even doing that after I try like four or five times.
So the software has a kind of basic mode and a pro mode, the expert mode. Are you using the expert mode to do this?
I've tried both. And I get
because the basic mode is going to make choices for you. And that's a case where it might reset it. You want to always do this in the expert mode. So that you can say, no, printer, scanner, you think you know what you're doing. You don't.
Yeah, I went into the expert mode and into everything that I could change and reset and default. And I've set everything and reset everything. And
yeah.
It's not,
it just sounds like, I'll be honest, sounds like buggy software. It's not what it's supposed to do.
Right.
I would check to see if there's updated software on the Canon website.
Okay.
Often the stuff that comes on the disc is old.
Right.
And, this sounds like it's a bug. And maybe newer software would fix that. There is third-party scanner software that you could probably use that might give you a better result. You could download it for free and try it. It's called ViewScan, ViewScan.
Okay.
And it's from Hamrick Software, so the website is Hamrick.
Okay.
And it's probably compatible with your scanner. It works with most scanners. At least you could download it and try it for free. See if it solves the problem. It is absolutely better than the Canon stuff.
All right. Let me ask you a question. From what I was reading before I started doing this, the quality or the type that I thought would be best to do this in is TIFF. Is that what you would suggest?
Yeah, TIFF is good because it's uncompressed. So there are file formats like JPEG where they take data out. It's what we call lossy compression. And you're going to lose some of the data that you've scanned in. With TIFF, the file sizes are larger, but every bit of the data that you scanned is there.
Yeah.
So you'll take up more hard drive space, but you know hard drive space is cheap nowadays, so I wouldn't hesitate to use TIFF.
I don't really care about that. I just want a good quality scan.
TIFF is the best possible quality.
I would, oddly enough, too, when I had the problem, I would go and change it to JPEG, that file type, and then I'd go back and change it back to the TIFF file type, and it would work like for one or two pictures, and then it would revert back to the problem I was having. But I'm going to go out and try the third party software.
See if ViewScan does it. Yeah, scan is TIFF. Though really, the hardest thing is to decide what dot per inch, how high resolution you want to scan it, because that's where file size can balloon up, and you may be storing more data than you can use. What resolution are you scanning at?
I'm not. It automatically picks it.
Okay. Well, ViewScan will give you a chance to pick other resolutions.
How will I know which one to...
It depends. 300 dots per inch is the lowest I would use, and I would probably do 1,200.
Okay, because I'm using 600.
600's fine. It depends what you're going to do with it. You're printing it at some point?
You know, I imagine some photos will be printed.
Yeah, so the printer, resolution is what you really care about. Screen resolution is much lower than 300 DPI. So, you know, the retina display is 360 DPI. So anything over that is going to look fine on even the highest quality screens. It's the printing that you care about. And so you should print, you should scan it at, you obviously don't want to scan it ever again. So scan it at the highest resolution you think you'd ever print it. 600 is, how big are the images?
Well, some of these photographs are from the 60s, so you know how they had the little small photos?
Yeah, yeah.
Some of them are like, you know, the regular size, the 3x4.
Do you think you'll ever blow them up bigger than that size?
You know, who knows? I have five.
That's the
brothers.
Problem. Who knows? And you don't, hard drive space is cheap, so do 1,200. You'll never need more than that. Let's put it that way.
Okay. If the Hamrick, for whatever reason, doesn't work, is there another third-party software that you could suggest?
If the Hamrick doesn't work, then there's something wrong with your scanner.
Okay. All right. Well, geez, I appreciate the help.
Oh, I think this is a great project. It's a lot of work, I know, and you don't want to waste time doing it wrong. So I'm glad you called.
Yes, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Have a great day.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Yeah, I like this Hamrick software a lot. It's called ViewScan. A lot of pros use it. It's great stuff. 8888-ASK, Leo is the phone number. I'm getting a little echo back to me right now, Kyle. I wonder why that is. Do you hear it?
I don't.
All right. Then I won't pay any attention to it whatsoever. Chat room is saying Silverfast is also commercial scanner software you might want to try. Silverfast.com, another alternative to ViewScan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Enya in the chat room says, I've been a graphic designer for 30 years. 1,200 DPI, way too high for a photo. That resolution is meant for line art. 300 to 400 dots per inch is good photo size for ink, jet, or offset printing, even if you go to 150%. The real issue is how high a resolution do you need to preserve all the data in the photo? That's really the only question. Because you're future-proofing it, so you don't know how big. You might be making a post, a billboard out of it someday. So you want all of the data that's in the photo. Now, the photo itself is probably not 300 or 400 or 500 DPI, especially an old Polaroid or something like that. So that's the question, really, in my mind. It's not what output you're going to do, because let's presume that disk storage is cheap. But so you want to store every bit of the data that's available, but no more. There's no point in having more data points than you have in the picture. It is probably true. 600 DPI is probably sufficient. You do 1,200 DPI. You're doubling the size, aren't you? So I wouldn't worry too much about how you're going to print it. Who knows? Maybe someday you're going to want to make a bus cover out of it. Storage is cheap. Probably 600 DPI is probably fine. Let's not waste storage. Barbara, Redlands, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Barbara.
Thank you so much. I love your show.
Thank you.
Learned so much from you, and I should apologize to your audience for probably the very most boring question of the day.
No such thing, because I guarantee you it's a question. The simpler the question is, the more likely others in the audience have the same question.
Well, I want your awesome advice on an iPod. I wanted to surprise my son,
aww,
who broke his iPod, fell off of his treadmill.
He landed on it, huh?
It broke to pieces.
Yeah.
Did I hear you say a week or so ago that iPods might be on their way out?
Well, that's pure speculation on my part. It's a shrinking market, and that's only because people who want iPods generally just buy iPhones, and then they get the capabilities of an iPod and the phone.
Uh-huh.
But for people who work out, for instance, there are smaller and less expensive iPods that are perfect. So,
okay.
No, it's not. They're not anywhere near dead.
And I do know that he takes his two on when he hikes some trails and
right.
all.
So, do you remember? Do you know what model he had that he broke?
I honestly do not.
Because the big difference in iPods is that there's the regular iPods, which are just music players, and then there's the iPod Touches, which look like iPhones. They have big glass screens. They support apps. They do everything an iPhone does minus the phone.
I know for a fact his just played music.
Okay. So that eliminates the touches.
Okay.
The touches are big, too, so they're not as good for the gym.
Okay.
Then, you probably should go to store.apple.com and look at, they have all three. And would you recognize his if you saw it?
No, because he lives
I see.
North, and I'm in Southern
California.
I got it.
So you're a nice mom. So the other question is, how big is music collection is, because the iPod Classics, which look like the old iPods, they have click wheels. They're the only ones that are big enough to hold 40,000 songs. They're 160 gigabytes. They're huge.
Wow.
And certainly they're small enough for the gym. And, you know, I don't think you'd go wrong buying this. I don't think he'd be unhappy. Probably he'd go, wow, that's great. The only question is if he had this little shuffle, you know, maybe because he was working out, he liked the shuffle because it just clips onto his clothes, but it doesn't hold as many songs. It only holds, you know, 1/80th the songs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but and it's only $49. It's $200 less, but it's still, you know, for somebody who's working out, that's the problem. I don't know what his preference. And then Apple's announced these new ones, the iPod Nanos, which are kind of in between. They're 16 gigabytes. They're 1/10 the size of the biggest one, but they have a bigger screen. I think you didn't give me a price point, so I don't know. But the classics are $250, and that's the one that holds the most storage.
I really think that's what he had.
And these are the ones that are most likely to be phased out because they're the old style iPods.
Ah, okay. Then what would you recommend?
What I would recommend is sending him a gift card.
Oh, that's a great idea.
That way, if you got it wrong, he doesn't have to return it. You can, yeah, you can send him a gift card for the amount of any one of these, and then that way he can choose. If, for instance, he said, well, I had a classic, but I really would like to upgrade to the iPod Touch, he could apply it to that.
Great idea. Thank you. And where do you recommend the gift card from?
Very simple. Go to store.apple.com. They sell them directly.
Okay.
And they'll mail it to him with a nice little message. And it will make him very, very happy.
Oh, thank you. I knew you could answer that for me. And may I ask one more thing of you?
Sure.
My computer recently broke. It is a Dell. It is going on 6 years old. The young man who is working on it thought at first it was the power supply.
Don't fix it.
Oh,
don't spend a penny more to fix that thing.
Oh.
It's too old. It's not worth it. It'll cost you more to fix it than to get a brand new one.
Wow. Oh, I'm glad I asked.
Unless it's something very simple that's wrong. Now that he's started getting into it and he's saying, well, it's going to be something serious, don't spend any money on that.
Okay.
In fact, what do you use it for?
Very simple things. All of my email and going online to, you know, research different things.
You know what my mom uses, and you might like it a lot, is an iPad.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah. I did think of that. They're very nice.
They're beautiful. They're light. They're simple. You can't get, there's no security issues. You can't get in trouble. They don't break because there's no moving parts.
Mm.
And I think you'd be very happy with an iPad, frankly.
That's a great consideration to make.
Yeah.
Because what I do have is a desktop.
Yeah. I don't know. If you like going there and sitting at the desk and working, then maybe you'd want to keep doing that.
Uh-huh. Would you recommend something other than a Dell?
No, the Dells are fine. It's just that after 6 years, that thing is pretty out of date.
Wow. Well, thank you for telling me that.
Yeah, and you can get a good Dell for $500. I wouldn't spend, you know, and it, how much is it going to cost to fix it? Has he given you a price yet?
Not yet, because unfortunately he said it appears it's the motherboard.
Yeah. You're buying a new computer then anyway, because the motherboard is practically the computer.
Okay.
So it's time for a new one. You know what I love, and if you're looking at a Dell, I would look at just to review the Dell XPS 1. It's their copy of the iMac. It's an all-in-one. It's just a big screen with a wireless keyboard and mouse. It's beautiful. I was very impressed with the quality. They start, I think, at $1,200. And it's a little, you know, it's a new computer, but they're beautiful.
Okay. And that is a desktop.
It is a desktop.
Hey, well, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Barbara. Thank you for calling. And, boy, you're a nice mom. Your son's going to really love that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Ricardo Di Bartolo, a.k.a. The Giz Whiz, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for the last umpteen million years. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
Very well. How are you?
I'm super fine.
I'm excited. I'm excited. You know, we do a podcast called The Giz Whiz.
Oh, yeah. When did you start that?
With you. It's with you.
Oh, it's about that one.
Yeah,
oh,
that one.
Okay.
And I'm excited because, you know, we do this fun little bit, Junk I Found on SkyMall. I'll say junk because I don't know what I could say on the radio. Junk I Found on SkyMall.
Yep.
And one of the things that we were taking votes on, whether I should review it, is the touchless toilet seat. Well, it has arrived already.
Oh, my word.
I'm ready to install it.
Oh, my. Oh, this is going to be a very upscale show.
Dude. I will not demonstrate it on the radio show today, though.
Oh, okay, good.
I might.
No, if you demonstrate it, that would be the place to do it.
Yeah.
Not on the podcast.
On the radio. Do it on the radio.
Yeah, do it on the radio.
Wow, look, the seat goes up. That's amazing. I am waiting on the massager, the that you strap, the back massage. It looks like a turtle shell that you strap on.
That
has not arrived yet.
Well, they knew you must have been in a hurry for the first thing first.
So. Yes. Oh, yes. Good point. Didn't think of that.
Yeah.
So every week, Dick joins us to show us a new gadget, a new gizmo that he's acquired in his place. We call it Gizneyland.
What
do you got at Gizneyland?
Well, you know what? I don't have it in hand because it's not out yet. There was another press event this week. Now, exactly 11 months ago, on October 22nd, 2011, your pick of the week for the Giz Whiz was your Fitbit Ultra.
Yes.
I think you've lost about 8 of those.
They fall off because they're belt buckle devices.
Yes, exactly. Okay, well, now it hasn't changed in that respect. But the Fitbit Ultra is leaving us, and we're getting two new Fitbits.
Good, because mine left already.
Oh, okay.
I left it in a park in Paris, France.
Oh, my word. Okay. Well, there's a tiny little guy called the Fitbit Zip.
The Zip. I have one right here.
One's going to start at $59. But the more deluxe one that resembles the one you had will be called the Fitbit One.
Yeah.
Now, as you recall, the Fitbit One, when you came in a Wi-Fi area, it would download your exercise.
You'll forgive me for being very concrete, but let me explain what this is before we get too far into the weeds here.
Okay.
It's a pedometer. It's a fancy pedometer. You put it on your belt. And okay. It counts your steps, right?
It counts your steps. It does. Well, you know, the new ones now do your sleep cycles, tells you how long you slept.
Well,
and
now
how
the Zip
soundly.
Doesn't do that. The Zip, which is their least expensive, goes on your, I guess, still goes on your belt.
Still goes on your belt.
And what it does is it tracks steps, total distance traveled, and calories burned. Unlike most pedometers, I mean, it does have a readout, but as you're pointing out, and I interrupted you, it does wireless syncing. And then the other one does, you have a special wristband, and you put it on the wristband, and it'll track your sleep, and then it'll also tell you how many stairs you've climbed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's and the new one's a Bluetooth 4.0.
Oh, so that's nice. So I that was because you used to have a Fitbit receiver that you would attach to the
computer. Yeah, so you had to go back to the Wi-Fi area right. and be in the neighborhood of the receiver to download the data. So now it'll go to your Apple device, Android coming soon. Also, the new Fitbit One will can wake you with vibrations so that you don't wake up your partner.
Oh, that's nice. So it monitors your sleep, and if you're not tossing and turning, it lets you sleep. But if you're starting to move around, then it goes, oh, he's almost awake, and it'll vibrate your wrist.
Let's get him out of bed
this minute.
So this is version 3. It's still at $99.95. And as you said, the kind of lesser version is $59.95.
See, this one, the other thing, I can lose more of these.
Yes.
Because it's less.
But, Leo, the big one, the new Fitbit One,
yeah.
is just 40% the size of the one that you had.
Oh, that'll make it harder to lose.
Exactly. Maybe you could just put it in your pocket and then that.
Well, I'm wearing, you know, this is a very hot category.
Oh, yeah, you're doing.
I'm wearing the Nike Fuel Band, which is, these are all just very expensive pedometers. This is $150.
Oh, my word.
It's a wristwatch, but it also tracks, it's really tracking steps and calories, but they call it fuel. And you set your fuel goal. So I set a fuel goal of 3,000 points a day. And then it gives you a little animation on your wrist when you do it, and it tells you how much more you have to do and stuff like that. And then you can just share it with your friends and stuff. But see, I'm thinking the new Fitbit, if it's 40% smaller, I should just swallow it. Dr. Mom, my physician's in the chat room, and she says just swallow it.
That's good. Just don't ever go to the bathroom or you'll lose your data.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And the Bluetooth version will be able to tell your friends what what exercises you're doing and how well you're doing, and you can find out what theirs are doing.
That's the most useful thing to all of these, is the social elements of this pressure. Yeah.
Social
exercise. Since I've been wearing the fuel, and I set a goal that's kind of high, 3,000 fuel points, so I'm always, like yesterday, it would kill me. I went to bed, it was 2,941 fuel. 60 points more, I would have hit my goal. So what I do is I notice I take the stairs more. I park farther away. I do things to kind of increase my fuel points. That's good, right? It's encouraging you to exercise.
Oh, that's good, yeah. Except when I was there, you kept saying, I need 100 more points. Ozzy, come here, wear this.
That did not work, by the way.
Oh, it doesn't?
No.
Oh, so you have tried it.
Uh-huh. No, I do. Yeah, apparently it's measuring like your dog. I have a small dog. I don't get any points from him wearing it. He wore it all day last week, and it didn't, nothing. Oh, the other thing, and I actually, in all seriousness, should probably mention, if you do exercises, as I do, that don't swing your arm, these are really designed for running and walking, but I do Pilates, for instance, you get very few points, even though I'm working out like a dog. Yoga, you won't get benefit. You'll get benefit, you won't get points. And that's really my problem, is that all of these are really designed mostly for running and walking. That's where they're the best. So if that's how you exercise, if you do maybe a Stairmaster where you're swinging your arms, or elliptical, a treadmill, they work fine on a treadmill. But they don't work as well on exercises where you're not swinging your arms.
Is there anything you don't know?
Yes. I don't know. I don't know who the commercial is for next. Thank you.
Well,
now
I know that now.
I've been told. Hey, Dick is here. He's going to stick around. Now, remember, we're doing a pre-taping after the show today, Dick, for the next hour.
Yep,
but Dick
exactly.
will join us
so
for
I'll
the Giz Fizz.
Yeah. I'll be back like at 6 p.m. My time, 3 p.m. your time.
6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv, where he just kind of, I don't know what he's just the Giz Fizz. He just talks.
We just talk.
It's really Dick's radio show is what it is.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dickie D. We'll talk to you in a few.
I'll be there.
All right. Shirley Laguna Niguel, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. My son is the tech guy in our family, and he couldn't answer.
Oh, no. Wait a minute, Shirley. I hate it when this happens. I've run out of time. Get Shirley's number. She'll be the first caller tomorrow. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Or keep her on hold, and we'll do it right after this. That's what we'll do. We'll do it right after this. We're going to keep calls coming in. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.